I never bother with people I hate. That's why the lady is a tramp. I don't like crap games with barons and earls. Won't go to Harlem in ermine and pearls.
The lady is a tramp. The great Lena Horne, born on this day in 1917, and we honor that fabulous human being with that, playing her music as we will with Bobby Womack as well. And I want to welcome you all back here to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and also to wish all of our Muslim brothers and sisters a very good and peaceful Ramadan and an easy fast during the day today, and have a lovely feast this evening. This is the beginning of Ramadan today. We are now joined by an interesting panel. The 28th of June, which was 2 days ago, was the anniversary of the Stonewall Riots. Now, for many of you, people who don't know, the Stonewall Riots took place in Greenwich Village in New York City, where the police had an activity regularly of gathering up all the gay men they could find at bars and on street corners and arresting them and shipping them off to jail. Well, they went into this one gay bar at Stonewall, and this time the men resisted and said, "We're not taking us to jail." And a rebellion ensued, and that became the Stonewall Riots, and became, many people say, as the birth of the modern gay rights movement was on that day in New York. And ever since, there's been a war on gay, lesbian, and transgender rights in this country. And in Maryland, part of it, culminated in legislation banning discrimination, also in the right to marry laws that were passed in the state of Maryland, and the first were by referendum in the country. So we look at where that's come to in all this time. This is also the anniversary, by the way. I think it was in 2002, I'll check that date, that Spain legalized marriage, same-sex marriage, and as well. So we're going to talk about what we've come to, where we haven't come to, and what all this means with our panel. Once again, Dr. Kate Trubinsky is with us. She is a lecturer of gender and women's studies and director of the Women Involved in Learning and Leadership Program at UMBC, and writes the blog What I Saw Riding My Bike Around Today, and it celebrates its sixth anniversary day of that blog. That's good to have you with us once again, Kate.
Thank you, Mark.
Van Michaels in studio. He's Black Trans Men, Inc., Maryland, D.C. chapter representative, local advocate who also pens the Real Trans Talk column for Baltimore Out Loud. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning, Mark.
Amara Jones joins us by phone, economic justice contributor for CallLines.com, who served in the Clinton White House where he worked in international trade policy. Amara, always great to have you with us.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Sharon Brackett's with us, board chair of Gender Rights Maryland. Sharon, welcome. Good to have you with us. Sharon, you there?
410.
Hi, Sharon, you with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, good. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can join us here also at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888 is the number here. So let me just begin. I mean, I kind of gave this kind of broad overview here, very broad overview, and what the significance of all this is. Imara, let me start with you. It's always great to have you with us. Whatever the topics are, you always have some interesting analysis. So take us to where we think we are now from the moment that Stonewall happened to where the United States of America is today.
Well, I'm still reeling from the effects of Pride, so I don't know how
effective
my comments will be this morning. if I can just also do one more thing and add to your comments that at Stonewall, what was really important as well was the contributions of trans women that day,
yes.
And particularly trans women of color, and Sylvia Rivera and others. And so that's just important as the all of the facts that you gave on gay men. I mean, it's been go back to your question, it's been stunning where we've come in the last 10 years. I mean, gay marriage being used as a wedge issue by the Bush administration in order to excite voters in places where they wanted to turn out votes, and the way that inflamed the issue of marriage and became a proxy for gay rights, not to mention anything about trans issues that are just as key. And at this point, to be in a totally different place in just a matter of 10 years. And I wanted to start there, not to say anything, of course, of 20 years ago or 40 years ago or 50 years ago, but just in the matter of 10 years where we've had a stunning reversal on The ability to serve openly in the military, on the ability to marry and to have that to be recognized by the federal government, and to the point where families, gay families and gay spouses and lesbian spouses and all the rest of it can be able to get the protections that they need under the law to feel secure in the relationships that people have decided to make for themselves, just like everyone else. Now to be able to have employment protections to be expanded for the first time in history, although not complete and not at the state level, which is really key, but for one out of five LGBT workers now in the United States due to this executive order that's possibly to be signed today, but over the next week or so, to be able to have protections for the first time in history in the United States. And all of this has occurred in a very short amount of time, and it's just stunning. And where we have to go is, you know, one of the most key issues that remains for LGBT workers is employment non-discrimination, and are those protections on the job where people are regularly harassed, and the numbers are off the charts. Two out of five people who are gay and lesbian have been harassed on the job. If you are trans, unemployment rates are seven times higher than those of the general population because of employment discrimination. We need to do a much better job to tackle the violence against trans men and women across the United States. I think every day there are at least four trans women, at least, who are, you know, who are killed because of their gender identity. And so there's a lot of work that remains. A lot of people need to continue to work for the freedom of everybody. And we're far from being done, but I think there's just no denying for anyone that the last 10 years have been amazing.
Kate Travinsky.
Well, I'm a bit of a history buff, as you might know. And what is interesting to me about this anniversary is thinking about what we don't remember. And one thing we don't remember, for example, is this, for example, the Compton cafeteria riots in San Francisco that happened several years before Stonewall, which really galvanized the trans community and gay community in San Francisco. The way that Stonewall has become memorialized as the beginning of a movement, but in a lot of ways that movement has lost some of the original sort of politics of the people who were there. Right. So as much as we can be excited about things like protection of our rights and law, what people were fighting for at Stonewall was survival, was to be treated as human beings. And when I recently wrote a piece for City Paper about queer politics in Baltimore, and what came up overwhelmingly with all the activists I talked to was how all the issues that the most important issues facing people today are things like access to health care, housing rights, the ability to feel safe in their neighborhoods, and sort of these sort of basic survival issues that affect not just the LGBT community, but people, you know, across all of our communities and those kind of intersectional identities of folks. So I think it's important to mark where we've come, but also what we lose when we sort of isolate Stonewall as the moment where everything happened. And just as the previous person said, when we forget who was really there, right, and forget the input they had. That's what I'd say.
I'll come back to a question about that between Stonewall and Compton, because I think it's an important question. And before we jump into some other meat of the matters, let me go to Sharon Brackett before we head over to Van Michael. Sharon? Sharon?
Yes, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we're waiting. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I'm having some connection issues today. I also wanted to point out, and Kate's point is well made, but also that trans women were key in the initiation of events at Stonewall, and this has sort of been kind of conveniently erased from history a little bit. It's the same sort of issue in that, you know, trans persons have been key components of these movements at their initiation, both in Compton and at Stonewall. And I think it's important that we take the time to recognize that, that, you know, we've been there since the beginning. This is not something new. The other thing that I would try to make a point on is that in employment presently for trans persons, Two things. One, we have a new bill in the state of Maryland, which will take effect on October 1st, which now makes it illegal to discriminate in employment, housing, and public accommodation for trans persons in the state of Maryland. And that's something that's been worked on by many people and many different groups for the last several years, including myself. So we're very proud to have that have happened in Maryland, and that it was signed by the governor in May. And so there's sort of a sea change that needs to happen even within the state of Maryland, where there needs to become a realization that it's no longer okay to discriminate against trans people in the state. And, you know, that's from Western Maryland to the Eastern Shore. The second point I would want to make would be that the EEOC has made a determination that discrimination against trans persons in employment is indeed sex discrimination. And there have been a number of notable cases where they have found for the trans person, more cases are coming. And so it's arguable right now that trans persons have employment protections in all 50 states, and the EEOC is interested in hearing your cases presently. That by no means that there's not discrimination present. One of the interesting things about law is that it really doesn't change anyone's mind. It just merely makes them aware that of a behavior that they may have been partaking in, that it's no longer okay to do it. And so I think that that's a very important point from the standpoint of these laws. The laws serve to educate perhaps more than deal with an enforcement issue. I think that's pretty critical, and it's a pretty big change for trans persons everywhere.
Van, how would you like to comment on this as well, Van Michael?
You know, I too like history, and I was looking at some things, learning some things actually myself. And I know in 1959 there was also a movement at Cooper's Donut in Los Angeles about gender nonconforming folk. You know, that early on, saying, hey, do not discriminate against us, and then moving into also, don't forget Philadelphia, which is at Dewey's lunch counter, the sit-in. There's where the African-American folks said, hey, we too exist. You know, we're gender nonconforming people, and look at us, we exist. So I think that looking at Stonewall, even early on as 1965 in Philadelphia, you know, African-American students were saying, we're going to look at this as our right to be. Where we are now, I think, with the African-American community is that we are still not up to par when we're looking at LGBTQ as a whole. And so we still need education in that area about what this means for us and develop our own voices around this. And I think that we should take a holistic approach and getting our community on board and developing our own language in regards to unemployment, health care, and what that looks like for us, and help educate the community as a whole and how to help us access that.
And as we learned the other week in this program, that Baltimore has the highest percentage of people of color who are in marriages, same-sex marriages of any city in America. And that's an interesting kind of thing. I think we forget about that power, and Baltimore's always been here. But it's now just kind of coming up into the mainstream of the world. And let's talk a bit about this. I mean, you know, I think part of the issue here is always the question of being in the mainstream and being outside. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a lot of debate back and forth, especially in the more radical press in the GLBT community about the question of marriage. But I was going to start, Imara. I remember John Waters was on the show, one of the times he was on the show about 8 years ago, and I asked him a question about gay marriage. We're in the middle of the debate of gay marriage, and John Waters said, "I oppose it." I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "You know, we're leading figures who's gay in the world of America, and you oppose gay marriage, and you're gay. Well, how could you oppose gay marriage?" He said, "Look, for years we didn't have to get married, we didn't have to go in the army, and we didn't have to raise children. I don't want any of it." So he's always funny, but beneath his humor, there was something very serious there.
I mean, I'm a gender I'm a gender and women's studies professor, and I remember my education about marriage was from feminist arguments from long ago about marriage as being about the exchange of property, women as property, as tying women into relationships that they couldn't leave for economic reasons. I mean, we were really critical of marriage. So the idea that this is like we finally got what we really wanted is an odd feeling from my perspective.
I mean, I think
Imara, go ahead.
I think it's really important to remember a couple of things. One, that marriage was not the fight that the gay community chose. It was the right. fight that the gay community was thrust in. The gays and lesbians were thrust in the entire community because it became a proxy for our human rights. And it was made so during a political year and a presidential year by the Bush administration for a very explicit reason to get votes. And so then as their people were voting whether or not to explicitly deny people of a right that's been affirmed to be guaranteed by the Constitution really became a really important question. And so it was a proxy fight. And actually, since that fight was won, a lot of other things had started to break across the board in terms of other human rights. And so I think that that's a really important thing. I think the most important thing that people would say is actually employment non-discrimination. That's really, really key. That's something that we still don't have as a guarantee at the federal level. But marriage came first because it was the fight that people were thrust in. And secondly, more different types of people being included in the marriage idea is actually reviving the institution because it's changing the definition of what it means to be married and why people should be married and what those arrangements are. And thirdly, I think that for people, there are people in the community for whom it was very important to have their relationships affirmed and to affirm, particularly if they had children, to be affirmed by law. And because of the inability for us to be able to do anything else around civil unions, because of the fight around marriage, that marriage for people, for many people who are in Baltimore, is really important.
I
think it's important for us to keep that in mind.
Right. And I think that it is. I mean, cause it's a very complex question. I mean, if from the neighborhood I lived in on the west side of Baltimore for 25 years, which is Windsor Hills, and I would say a good 15-20% of all the people who owned homes in Windsor Hills were older, gay, black and white couples, men and women, living in that neighborhood who had a lot of issues around their property and what that meant because they weren't married. And I think maybe one of those couples had kids, the others did not, and they were and then you have this thought just came in here that I'll add into the mix and see how this fits. And I'll read it to you. It said, "And gays and lesbians and queers for generations have been creating our own relationship forms, and now we are trying, being expected to assimilate into straight monogamous relationship models that haven't worked for straight people, so why should they work for us?"
I mean, one thing marriage has always made me think is, hey, we're in love, let's tell the cops. Like, it's an odd way of being affirmed, I think. But I get it, right? I get it because it is the model that we have.
But also the other part, it seems to be with that, and then maybe go to Van and then back to Sharon, I mean, is that every culture has had some ceremony, not necessarily done by the state, that says we are a couple,
exist.
Right?
That's
whether it's a serial monogamy or whether it's for life, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm. And I also think that when I'm looking at the marriage piece, economically, there was not necessarily a buy-in for a lot of African-American folk who were maybe lesbian and gay of the lower economic status, because that really revolved around property and things that we're leaving behind. And when we cannot access jobs, when we cannot access the things that will allow us to build that capital, to leave those things behind, then marriage, it's important, but then again, it's not important. Because when you look at on the ground, when you look at lesbian relationships, gay relationships, relationships are formed and they're making it. Marriage could also mean a hindrance to access to things like, for instance, if a couple is, one is on social services and one is working, so we have to combine our households, so now something is going to get missing. So for me, I felt like lesbian and gay in African-American community, the marriage buy-in wasn't necessarily the best thing unless your income said so, like this would benefit us. It would move us into, you know, a better bracket
or
not. Yes. So and when we're looking at children, they are able to exist and be nurtured and be affirmed, whether the state or federal government says so or not. So those protections do happen. And really it goes into going to a lawyer and have those. I have a couple of friends actually who did that. They were married, but before they got married, they had last will and testaments and everything drawn up. So the paperwork was there to protect them in case something were to happen to either one of them.
What were you about to say, Sharon?
So with respect to marriage, it's kind of an interesting storyline with trans persons. I always thought if you're a trans person, no matter who you decide to marry, no matter what your gender, there's always some question about who's marrying who and why and what. mm-hmm. just because of the way the general populace thinks. So I always thought, you know, marriage is definitely a key right for trans people because there are so many flavors and varieties. Mm-hmm. And so it affects all trans persons, not just some. But I think the key point is that there's a key difference between, you know, what, you know, marriage of love and the marriage in the legal construct, which is essentially a contract. And I've always been amused by people who willingly sign a contract without reading any of the fine print, because it's a hell of a contract to get out of, and it can be very expensive and very difficult. But I guess the concern I have and have had for some time is that one, you know, and it, I guess it's subsiding now because marriage is sort of becoming the de facto answer across the land. But unfortunately, marriage was not the most important missing right for trans folks. We've been mostly concerned about, you know, having a place to, you know, live, and of course affording that place to live by having a job. And I think the greater movement was kind of co-opted by marriage. I guess, you know, arguably one could say it was a low-hanging fruit, but they kind of skipped over our rights in the process. And I think it's really important that we get this train back on the track and focused on making sure there's equality for all people, regardless of their disposition in this alphabet soup that we have of a movement. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's critical. And I'm happy to see there's some renewed interest in that. But you know, employment is one part of it. There are a lot of other pieces that need to come into play, like healthcare, equal access to those things. Really seeing Obamacare take on and support trans people for things like transition expenses, surgeries, and things like that, which are very expensive items and pretty much out of the reach of many people. I think we need to see some pressure in those spaces from our LGB allies because, quite frankly, we were with you on marriage, and now we need you to come back and help us with these other things.
Imara?
I think I agree with that. As I said before, marriage was not the first issue. It was actually in employment and housing. But we can't forget that the Bush administration made LGBT people a target with the reelection campaign in 2004 across the country in some very specific ways, to say explicitly that we didn't have rights. And so it was the fight that we were thrust in, not the fight that we chose. And I think it's important for us not to forget that. That was a very, I remember that being a very fraught and fearful political time to have the president of the United States coming after an entire community. And the reaction was because it was a proxy fight, not because it was the most important issue. But at the same time, you know, let's remember that marriage, I can't remember in the boys, in the case for Proposition 8, they came up with what? It's 549 or something like that. Rights that married people do have. And for people that choose to enter into marriage, those things are really important, like the ability, even if you don't have property, to get Social Security of a spouse who's passed away, or for a child of an LGBT couple to be able to get Social Security from one of the parents that have passed away.
Right.
For a lot of social services and that sort of thing that are bound up and that are transferred through marriage, that is really important. And we're not forced to marry, but for people who want to be married, I think it is an important right. Is it the most important right? We had a big debate about that beforehand. But is it an important right for the people that need it and choose to enter into that contract? I say yes. And what's interesting is that LGBT people are redefining marriage. It's moving away from contractual relationships. And these marriages are very different. And I know that a lot of straight couples now are interested in the way that non-straight people negotiate marriage because of the lack of specific roles and things that you have to do in property transfer and children. What marriage is becomes a totally different thing. And so it's important to realize that we're also changing marriage for people who want it. And I'm don't make an argument for or against it.
But what I find really interesting is that we are here talking in regards to the 45th year anniversary of Stonewall. And here we are again talking about marriage, which is an LGBT issue when in the beginning we had gender nonconforming trans folk saying, hey, this is about discrimination here. Overall, you're putting us out of public places. You're not serving us. We're being harassed by cops. We're being assaulted. And here again, the conversation turns to LGB. However, we casually throw in T just to be gracious. Mm-hmm. So again, to point it back in the direction of where we started, this is we are, quote unquote, the stepchildren of the entire movement. And we need to, like Sharon said, get this back on track, which looks at things like the higher percentage of attempted suicide rates of black transgender people, which is 41%. 32% are living at 10,000 or below in the economic bracket. So these are the topics. That's where we are now. And these are the things that we have to get on board with. So when we look at LGB, we say let's bring them on board because transgender people are people, and they also some identify as lesbian, gay, and bi, and queer. And so then we need to move away from even when we look at marriage, we look at, say, male and female still an ideal. However, in translation, we need to look at how that translates for those that don't identify in any of the binary. So yeah. That's where we need to move the conversation now, out of binary and into people and what they need and how they can access it.
Dan, that is such a good point. Can I just say one quick thing?
We'll take a very quick break, okay. And you can come right back to that point. Because I have some other issues I want to raise around this and that may be a little divisive, but I think they have to be raised. We'll be right back as we look at what these anniversaries mean in the GLBT communities. Stay with us, 410-319-8888, and don't go away.
Interested in donating your vehicle to an organization you believe in, like Public Radio WEAA? It's simple. We'll tow your vehicle, and you receive a tax deduction in support of the great music, talk, and cultural programming you enjoy on WEAA. You'll also receive a one-year membership. The number is 1-866-789-8627 or WEAA.org. Thanks.
Hi, this is Marcia Jews, host of Keep It Moving, the perfect recipe for an intriguing, informative hour that's hard-edged with a healthy dose of humor and education. Expect the unexpected each time you tune in, where the nation's leaders and experts stop by Mondays at 7 p.m. Keep It Moving with Marcia Jews, WEAA, the voice of the community.
Welcome back here to the Mark Steiner Show for the final part of this conversation with our guest. Reminding you on the way back to the conversation, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information, www.mecu.com, or go to steinershow.org and click on their banner, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. We are here with Sharon Brackett, who is Board Chair of Gender Rights Maryland, Van Michael, who is Black Trans Man, Inc., Maryland, D.C. Chapter Representative, who pens the Real Trans Talk column for the Baltimore Out Loud. Imara Jones is Economic Justice Contributor for Color Lines, who served in the Clinton White House, where he worked in international trade policy. And Dr. Kate Trubinsky, a lecturer in Gender and Women's Studies and Director of the Women Involved in Learning and Leadership Program at UMBC, and writes the blog, What I Saw Riding My Bike Around Today. And you were about to say what, Kate?
I was just going to say that piggybacking on what Van said, if we look back at Stonewall, it was about people fighting back against state power, fighting back against the police. And here we are this many years later saying, you know, no longer fighting against a state that's violent towards us, but asking that state for protection for us. And it's an interesting switch. And in many ways, police violence in trans communities is so sky high, you know, and that issue sort of has fallen off the table from mainstream LGBT organizing. And it's just an interesting historical switch from resistance to the state to asking for inclusion in that state.
I think in some ways, Amar, that's always been the issue whenever people fight for their rights in America, which is the question of what inclusion means and then be included into what, and all the controversy surrounding that, especially when people, for whatever numerous reasons, were always the other.
Right. I mean, that's the irony of American democracy from the beginning, right, is that we have a predication that the state is there to recognize and to protect people as individuals, regardless of who they are, in order to pursue some very limited goals, right? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But it was began as a slave republic, which meant that a significant number of the people that were living in the country were excluded from that contract. And so there's been a fight from the beginning for whole swathes of people, and everybody knows, and we don't need to go through them, women on down and across the board, to be able to be included and recognized as citizens. And so I think this fight for recognition and protection is just the right to be included and recognized as a full human being with citizenship, guaranteed with the rights of protection under the Constitution. That shouldn't be necessary at all. It's ridiculous that we have to do that, but that's just what we have to do. And that opposition of who's in and who's out then becomes the argument and the reality about who faces state violence and who doesn't, who gets state protection and who doesn't, who gets rights and who doesn't. It's a ridiculous a dynamic, but that's the dynamic that was set up because of the contradictions in the United States from the beginning.
So I think these are the kind of complications we talk about. And when you look at a city like Baltimore or Detroit or New York or anywhere in this country, and there are the questions of class and race always tumble into this. I mean, because I think America has this view of the GBLT world as one of the upper class. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's the vision.
Which is totally false, by the way.
Right, I know. because that's what's on the big screen.
We're all so rich.
That's people...
the exact opposite. You're more likely to be a person of color if you're LGBT, and you're more likely to be unemployed, and you're more likely to have a far less per capita income than the average person. It's totally false.
And if you're trans, you're at the bottom layer of that cake.
Yeah, definitely.
So I mean, so I think that what I'm trying to say is I think that in the majority of society, it's a very different view. Do you know what I mean? I think the popular view is very different than that.
Well, I mean, if we look at the gay people we see on TV, they are all having a great time. They're all unless they're dying in the streets and being saved by a detective on Law and Order. So we're either being killed first, or we are the life of the party.
They're middle class couples on sitcoms or they're designers on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Making a lot of money.
That's correct. And another piece of it is too that we do need to pay attention to how transgender people are portrayed in the media. And when we look at this, we have three world oil machines in the United States that do a lot of work around this, and LGB. However, they're just coming up on the tail end of transgender folk and looking at what they need. And I think that oftentimes when they're executing their ways and how to reach out to those who are the marginalized of the marginalized, they don't even have the tools to do it. Because then it becomes a political agenda. Like, I look at sometimes how Baltimore City can be named like one of the third friendliest cities or a friendly city here. However, we have the murder of Candy Hall that just happened, and there's no outcry. There's no movement at all.
Candy Hall being the
transgender woman who was just found murdered a couple of weeks ago in the east side of Baltimore. So I'm looking at those numbers, and Kelly Young, and the countless probably of trans men who are also found dead and not even numbered. We're looking at HIV numbers, but we won't look at the numbers of transmission with trans men and how that plays into cis males and the community. So we have a lot of things that we have numbers around, but what actual work and where are the resources actually being poured into?
So folks, joining us, I'm sorry, 410-319-8888, your thoughts on this is as we look on this, as I started out with the Stonewall anniversary and people saying things came before Stonewall, and they did in Compton, but I think that the difference was that when you look that Stonewall brought it to the consciousness of the nation.
Yeah. And
more than it's just like all the things that happened in Mississippi and Alabama and the freedom struggle, the crossing the bridge at Selma and the death of the three civil rights workers, even though dozens of black civil rights workers had been killed already throughout the struggle. But those two instances brought it to the attention of the American public, which is what Stonewall did.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that there's political uses of memory, like sort of off topic, but also not. When Harriet Tubman was helping,
I heard you were going to be
plan. I can't help it. I'm on a Tubman kick right now, but
that's when, okay.
When Harriet Tubman was helping John Brown plan the raid on Harper's Ferry, she wanted to do the raid on July 4th, right? Because she wanted to use that anniversary and do something political with it. John Brown wasn't ready. Tubman always was. So we know how that turned out. But so I think there's use in using Stonewall as a moment of celebration. But it's also a great moment for us to remember and bring back the issues that weren't resolved from then.
And I think it's imperative.
I was about to go on my Brown Tubman thing, but I won't do it right now.
<I'll> save it
see what
for
you
later.
Started?
Yeah.
Because we're really at a pivotal moment here. And when we look at youth and how youth are now coming and understanding themselves to be queer youth and not necessarily even buying totally in early on in their lives, we have parents now that are raising trans children early, first grade, second grade. So it's time to really get on the ball and look at this.
And we have to say it very quickly. We only have like 2 minutes left in this segment. But that this is this what's happening is a transformation of consciousness in America, and it doesn't happen overnight, but it's happening, I think, being pushed very quickly because of what happened with marriage equality, and that began to push the envelope that's spreading in a ripple across. This is, I don't mean trickle down. I mean rippling out.
I have to really agree with what you're saying, mm-hmm. Mark, because one of the there is a wake that's been left behind marriage, and so there's an opportunity for things. But for folks who are not aware, a few weeks back, Laverne Cox was on the cover of Time magazine, and
right.
The topic was the tipping point.
Right,
and
right.
I think as I tell people, trans, well, that's just the new normal. You're going to see a lot of trans people. All of these trans children that you see, they're going to have the benefit of having transitioned in youth and just living, an everyday life where they don't have any of this angst that many of us who transition later in life have to deal with.
And you saw that the young trans woman who was elected queen of the Digital Harbor High School prom.
Absolutely.
Which is that's young people making a statement about who they are and what they think about the future, which I think is important.
I think there's no question about that. The one concern I do have in the sort of notoriety that we're applying to both young and very public trans people is they all seem to be sort of coming out of the entertainment space or they're very young or whatever. And that's a very small segment. That's a very small slice of the reality of trans lives. I know Van will probably, echo some of these sentiments as well. There are indeed trans persons who have been kind of relegated to, the sex work space and things like that, but mm-hmm. there are so many more who are not. I mean,
correct.
If you have a cell phone, just keep this in mind, if you have a cell phone, the person that developed the VLSI technology in your phone, the integrated circuit, that's a trans woman. So everybody who's got a phone or anything electronic in the universe, you owe a debt of gratitude to a trans woman.
So Sharon, I'm sorry, I have to break in. You've given us the final thought for the day because we do have to break here, but that was, I love that fact. Who knew? I didn't know, but we'll remember that one. Sharon Brackett, board chair of the Gender Rights Maryland. I want to thank Van Mitchell, who writes Real Trans Talk column for Baltimore Out Loud. Huh?
Van Michael.
What'd I say?
Van Mitchell.
I'm sorry, Van Michael, pardon me.
With Lewis Mitchell?
Dr. Kate, I'm just moving too quickly. Dr. Kate Trubinsky, lecturer in gender and women's studies, UMBC. Good to have you here as
Thank
well.
You.
And my friend Amara Jones, economic justice contributor for ColorLines.com. Thank you for being with us as well.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Good to have you all with us. Interesting discussion and lively. We're going to take a very brief break. We're going to go out to break with All Along the Watchtower by the great Bobby Womack. So we'll be right back with Leah Tarachansky from Real News talking about what's behind the headlines in Israel and Palestine you do not see. Stay with us.
Hey! There must be some way out of here. Said the joker.